Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management. Welcome back to our Mobility Management podcast. Today, I'm joined by Diane Rassico from National Seating and Mobility and Wayne Grau from NCART to discuss wheelchair repair. And to tell you just a little bit about our speakers today, Diane Rassico is the VP of Payer Relations at National Seating and Mobility. Her areas of expertise include client relations, contract review and negotiation, policy implementations, profit and loss administration, continuous process improvements, and change management. In her role at NSM, Diane is responsible for developing profitable in-network relationships with all payers. She coordinates with NSM's payer relations team for the implementation of all activities related to contracting, credentialing, business, and medical licenses, fee schedules, and new payer setups, along with training and process improvements for the department. Wayne Grau is the executive director at NCART. Wayne started his career in the home medical equipment industry in 1990 with Pride Mobility Products, where he began as regional sales manager and eventually assumed new responsibilities that included legislative affairs. Wayne was promoted to director of rehab industry affairs and at that time began working exclusively with complex rehab companies. And then he was also appointed to the NCART board of directors. After a successful period with MK Battery, Wayne was asked to lead NCART as its executive director. And our podcast is sponsored by National Seating and Mobility. National Seating and Mobility is North America's premier provider of customized mobility, home and vehicle accessibility, and full-service equipment maintenance and repair solutions for people who have mobility needs. NSM provides 360-degree complete mobility solutions to meet needs ranging from simple to complex. That could mean customizing a power chair to maximize comfort and independence, or installing a chairlift to access the second floor of a home, or simply repairing existing equipment to keep clients moving. No matter what is needed, NSM has the innovative products and reliable team of experts to keep clients and families moving so they can enjoy life to the fullest wherever that takes them. For more information on National Seating and Mobility, visit nsm-seating.com. Diane and Wayne, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to be talking today about wheelchair repair, which I know is an enormous, complex subject. So before we dive into some ideas and strategies, possible strategies, I wanted to start at the beginning. I wanted to ask you about the pain and the frustration that I know wheelchair riders and their families feel when it takes a long time to get their equipment repaired. Now, National Seating and Mobility is a nationwide wheelchair provider. NCART is an organization of wheelchair professionals, including providers, state provider organizations, clinical organizations, academic institutions, and seating and wheelchair manufacturers. So I wanted to start by asking how your organizations and how you personally might feel about the current process of wheelchair repair. And by that, I mean, do you also feel frustration? And do you understand why consumers are frustrated?
It's very frustrating for both parties, for our customers and for us as a provider. CRT providers and suppliers are having to navigate a lot of complex policies that deal with the insurance plans and what we have to do for most of our customers. Majority of them are going to be, you know, processing their wheelchair repairs via the insurance. In addition to what's already a complex system that's in place, there are a number of challenges that affect repairs in the CRT for the consumers. That's been magnified, unfortunately, over the past couple of years with the COVID situation, supply chain challenges that we've had. It's not like you can just call me today and come into one of our branches and get your chair repaired immediately, because a lot of them have to go through the policies, procedures for authorization that we as a provider have to follow. It can sometimes take it a little bit of extended time than we care for. It's definitely more than we care for. Most of our repairs, over 90% of them, are also done in the home. We're one of those few industries that do the majority of our services in a client's home. And this involves a lot of coordination of scheduling time, et cetera. It's not, like I said, a simple thing. And most wheelchair parts are proprietary. We have various manufacturers. We're one of those suppliers that do not have one particular one that we work with. We work with all of them. And so a lot of our customers, as a national supplier, we have well over 8 different suppliers that have up to 1,000 different components of parts for that one wheelchair. It can depend on the design of what it is. So it's not something that could be interchanged and swapped out like you would think for other pieces and components of a repair that you might think of. So it's very complex. It's not a simple fix. And that's, you know, the name goes complex rehab for a reason. You know, it's not uncommon either for a lot of times when we go out to a client's home for initial repair that they tell us, let's say it's their battery, they think. And we get there, 9 times out of 10, we see something else is wrong with it too. So now we have to go back to get authorization for that part or piece to get done also. Which also kind of adds to that timeline frame, which gets very frustrating for a client. Why didn't you fix it the first time? Why could you do it at this? So there's various things that can sometimes add to that process of why it is taking so long. The other thing is too, wheelchairs are expected to wear and tear. Even though wheelchairs are a 5-year useful lifespan, that does not mean the wheelchair is going to last 5 years and never need a repair, or that all parts and components are covered under that 5-year useful life. There's expected to have wear and tear on batteries, tires, armrest, joystick components. These things are commonly used and expected to get replaced or repaired during that 5-year life. And that's not under warranty. But however, the unfortunate thing in the industry is we don't can't do preventative maintenance. This is the client doesn't get service until it actually breaks down. And that's a little bit of backwards thinking process. Think about that for something that you have as a complex medical piece of equipment. There's some maintenance components and stuff that are done. But for some reason, over the years and how things are set up, CRT is not set up that way. The client doesn't get service until the actual chair goes down, which is an unfortunate thing because a lot of our clients, depending on what type of chair they're in, especially more complex, what we call a group 3 chair or higher, if that goes down, they're down. They can't go anywhere. A lot of times they're stuck at home. They're stuck in bed or something of that nature. So it's a terrible thing. It's not a good thing. We want things to be serviced as fast as we can. And lastly, unfortunately, what really made this horrible and why you're hearing a lot about right to repairs and things that are coming up over this past year or so is what has happened with COVID and supply chain was a perfect storm. So for us, few suppliers that actually do this business anymore, there was a major supply shortage that started in spring of 2022. And during that time period, you had a back order of parts and pieces, even new equipment you couldn't get. So that added to another problem on top of it. And all those clients, when they're breaking down, especially with joysticks, et cetera, which you need to function a chair, this added up. So now we're at a perfect storm of backlogs that we're now finally now coming out of it. We've got supply chain status that's backed up, but it just really worsened the situation and really shed the light on just how broken the repair process is that we have to go to and how challenging it is for, unfortunately, for our customers. So those are just some things that I know that from our side of it as a provider have really been a struggle.
Wayne, I know that you work with the ITEM Coalition very closely. You work with a number of other organizations. Do you understand the frustration that consumers are feeling? Are you hearing a lot of that? And kind of how do you personally feel about that? Are you also frustrated?
Yes. I mean, look, as Diane stated, the current process is broken and it's in need of repair and service reform. Okay, we just don't want to stick a Band-Aid on it because that's the way it's been going for years. The repair process has been inefficient for many years, but the public health emergency broke it. It broke it with supply chain issues and labor shortages, and that is still continuing, as Diane has described. It's very frustrating for consumers, and we've heard that because they just want their equipment fixed as fast as possible, and we understand that completely. And again, if we were operating in a system not controlled by the payers, then it would be much faster. Unfortunately, we as an industry have been educating payers over the last 20 years on the bottlenecks and the inefficiency of the process. And everyone, excluding Medicare, Medicare of all people, believes we are coming at this from a profitability perspective when really the focus is on eliminating red tape and it will speed up the process for consumers. You know, Diane stated 90% of the repairs are done in the home, which places additional burdens and obstacles that limit the number of repairs that we can do in the home versus being able to perform double the number of repairs in our repair facilities. I can tell you, NSM has made considerable investments in their in-shop locations to create a better repair experience for their consumers. And that's happening with other providers as well. So we understand it and we want to fix it.
Okay. So there's agreement on that, that boy, everybody is frustrated and everybody acknowledges that there's an issue. So now I'd like to pivot to talk about how NSM and NCART have been working on the repair issue. And I understand that sometimes those efforts are public and people are aware of them. And there probably are some other parts of the problem that you're working on behind the scenes. So first of all, how big an issue is this for wheelchair professionals, for the wheelchair provider? How big a problem is this? And can you also give me an idea of what resources you've been tapping into, such as any organizations or experts you've been working with to try to attack this problem?
Sure. NCART is participating with consumers, legislators, suppliers, and the state agencies to educate everyone on the present repair process. These stakeholders have, I think, been surprised when we go through the complexity of the issue. Okay, it seems so simple, but it's very complex. We do wish it was simple, but the issue is multifaceted, and we just can't point to one thing and say if we fix that one issue, all the problems of repair and service are going to go away. You know, we are working nationally with consumer groups, United Spinal, Christopher and Dana Reeves Foundation, and the Item Coalition, as you mentioned, to educate them and also to get their input. We want to listen to the consumer groups. They have some good ideas that we think that we probably want to include in the regulations or legislation. But in the end, we all need to work together to get repair and service reform passed. We no longer, as I said before, will accept the Band-Aid approach. Reform is needed and real reform now.
Yeah, and to the point that Wayne was speaking to, for us to NSM, we have been working locally in some marketplaces with some advocacy groups, consumer groups, to get feedback on the experience of what we're dealing with as a provider. We know there's always room for improvement, especially with communication to the customer and how they receive things and scheduling and how it worked best. We have started to invest heavily in this past year, year and a half, and into the next 2 years, IT platforms that we need to put behind the scenes to help with our routing, to help get things over to our insurance plans faster, or to build diagnostic exceptions to what we do. The remote service diagnostic is huge, but it's going to take more time too, because we need our customers to get on that platforms too, which is not always an easy thing. Heavy investment in staffing. There's never enough, as we kind of mentioned earlier, Wayne was stating too, there is a labor shortage. There's a labor shortage across the nation. To be a repair technician is not a simple job. You're going to the home, it takes a lot of time. Think about it, you're learning over 4,000 different component pieces just for one manufacturer. If you're dealing with 8 to 9 different manufacturer component chairs, that's a lot to learn. And it takes time. And it takes time to get that experience and understanding to know those chairs inside and out. We've also invested in looking at how we're staffing in certain marketplaces where we have your customer base. The challenge is you're getting less and less providers out there doing complex rehab. So now you're seeing bottlenecks too. You're down to 2 or 3 providers in a marketplace. That's not a good thing. It's a challenge and it's hard for them. We've seen that because over the years of what has happened in the industry, and a lot of people have exited the market. I mean, we love to service those, but there's also capacity to be a national supplier. We can't keep getting stretched thin and we need the help. So it's a challenge. You know, we're working with the National Association, with NCART, AA Home Care, United Spinal. We're doing the same things. Want to work on language and policies. For myself, work with the insurance plans and understanding how the government and state providers and policies are set up. They're antiquated. It's not real world policies that are set. These are old. They've been there for a long time. It's not what the industry deals with. It's not what our consumers deal with. At the end of the day, our customers are paying for this, really. I mean, it's their quality of life that's being hindered here. So we do need to get changes done. It is a system that has kind of been broken. No one really understands. When I talk with some senators and legislators and tell them exactly how it operates, they kind of go, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. And they don't even know their own policies and state procedures that go in place for a CRT. So there's a lot that needs to be done from all avenues. Everybody can do better. I want to state that up front. Everybody can do better. But we're moving towards it. It just can't happen fast enough for our consumers right now. And that's the problem. And we're feeling it.
So it's fair to say that a lot of different groups are coming at this problem from different angles, different perspectives, different specialties. And it's going to take basically everybody participating, because this is a problem that is not a simple problem. So it's not going to be a matter of, hey, you providers need to do better, or hey, you insurance companies. I mean, it's everybody that needs to come together. Is that an accurate way of looking at it?
Yeah, it's not a, like I said, it's not a simple, it's a complex issue. There's multiple things. You can't just throw more people at it and think that's going to fix it. Let's be real blunt. It's not going to be that. It takes a multitude of other things that go to, from all aspects that we kind of spoke to. But we all need to face that and make us a forward step with that. It's very much a, you know, a multifaceted component that needs to be done.
Yeah, I would say, look, absolutely. We can get this done, but it's about all of us focusing on working together. And if we do that, we can make it happen. We've seen that happen before, and we believe that working together with everybody will give us real service and repair reform.
Now let's turn to, I have a couple of suggestions that I wanted to sort of discuss that I've heard being thrown out there from different entities. For example, one suggestion is to create a repair window, meaning that from the time a consumer contacts someone like NSM and says, my wheelchair is broken, and Diane, I think maybe sometimes that is literally all the information you get is the wheelchair is broken. You don't get a lot of background into what that might mean. But someone contacts NSM and says, my wheelchair is broken. The repair window would require the provider for you to send a technician to the consumer's home and examine the wheelchair in X number of days, whatever number of days that is, 3 days, 4 days, whatever. I know it can be a challenge for you to send a technician to drive for hours to a consumer's home right away. Could this be an opportunity for the industry to use, for example, remote service technology to create virtual visits? Might that be something that gets the repair process moving more quickly? And my thought is that it would be kind of almost like telehealth appointments for wheelchairs. Is that an example where we could create something like a repair window, but we would want to apply technology to it to make it more feasible?
Absolutely. And we do that now. We do have remote service diagnostics that we do. And another national provider does the same. So there is steps for that. And what it does, it involves that, you know, to do this, the client, our customer, has to be able to use a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop too. And if they have a client or a caregiver, because as we know, a lot of our consumers can't necessarily manipulate and move around their chair too. So that needs to make sure it's something that we can do. So there's some things that for a remote diagnostic, absolutely. Remote diagnostics, what the first thing we always try to do if we can with a consumer, because it does save a step in a process. So sometimes if our consumer, if we're able to get to them and they do have the ability, a tablet or a caregiver, they have the mobility, because a lot of our consumers are really smart about their chairs. They kind of have an idea. They think it's one thing. We'll say, okay, great. We'll do a remote diagnostic in with them and say, let's look at it. Sometimes that remote technician, which is usually a senior technician who has experience and knows the chairs much more so that does our remote diagnostics, they can look and see maybe it's a loose wire. And they can say to the client, hey, I think you have a loose wire connection on here. Can you or your caregiver, if someone's there with them, can you move this? And sometimes it might fix it, which is great. We save a trip, get them up and moving. What's a good thing about the remote diagnostic is it helps us save a step. Like you said, 9 times out of 10, since everything's in the home, we have to go out and evaluate, right? That takes time. And with our scheduling, I'll be honest, we're 2 to 3 weeks out a lot of times because we're packed because everyone's doing it. Everyone's got to get on a calendar. Everyone's got to get on the schedule. We got to route them. And we're trying to make that even more efficient to the IT systems that we spoke about and sharing and job swapping and stuff of that nature. But when that gets involved, we can look at that. If we can see there's 2 or 3 things remotely, I can call the insurance next and say, okay, for those who do have to require an authorization or are an RX, I might need to get stripped from the doctor, depending on the insurance plan to even do that repair, depending on what the client has. We can save a step and get that going. And then a lot of times, part of the things that we're doing too is if we know 9 out of 10 times that repair is covered by the insurance, if it's just a battery or if it is a loose wire or something simple, I can go ahead and what I do, what we call credit accept, and get that order going ahead of time. That saves weeks if we can get that done. So it's very important that we do it. It has to be an option for us. That is the times. And our consumers are pretty savvy. But again, it has to take teamwork to make that work also.
Look, National Seating Mobility and the wheelchair manufacturers have invested a lot of money to offer remote technology. Because as Diane says, when it can be utilized by the consumers, it will speed up the repair process. And in some cases, the problems can be fixed right then and there. It saves that step. You know, Laura, you brought up a good point, though, about repairs in the home. You know, we as an industry have always offered and will continue to offer in-home repairs for consumers who are unable to utilize remote technology who don't have the transportation to get to our repair facilities. However, you know, more consumers are choosing to come to our repair facilities because that's because they know they can get their equipment repaired faster. The industry has to do a better job of educating the consumers that they have choices as to where and when they can get their equipment repaired. You know, we are also working with a few states to have transportation cover for wheelchair repairs, you know, thereby giving the consumer access to transportation options that will help quicken the process.
That sounds great, because I love what Diane said about sometimes someone might think it's a battery problem on a power chair. And if you've got a good technician, right, a senior technician who has seen it almost all, right, seen it all, that person might say, can you do this and this for me? Oh, I am almost positive it's the battery. Or I'm really concerned that I don't think it's just the battery. I think it's something else. And at least that gets you further down the road versus sending a technician and all the technician knows is that the chair doesn't move. I mean, there's a huge difference between those two starting points, right? Knowing like we're 95% sure it's just the battery to like we're 90% sure it's not just the battery. So that, and that might even impact the type of technician or experience that you send out there.
So absolutely, because it depends. So like I was saying before, if we have a younger technician and let's say our remote diagnostic tech looked at it and said, I think there's a couple of different things. This is a more complex chair. It might be two or three things. That will dictate to my team at the branch locations to say, hey, I need to send so-and-so out, get them on that route with this person because they got more experience with this. That's another thing. So a lot of times when we do this remote, it helps save that extra step to give us the right type of technician too, depending on seniority, complexity of the repair.
If we could get, you know, prior authorization removed for repairs, okay, which doesn't make any sense. We talk to legislators and consumers, it just doesn't make any sense. That repair technician can bring the equipment out there, what he thinks it's going to be, and repair it right then and there, not having to waste another trip. And again, the consumer having to wait. And again, that's the kind of thing that we're trying to show folks and educate them on so they understand the process is broken. We need to fix it.
Now, that's a great point, Wayne. It's not just the wheelchairs that are broken. The process, the policy, they're broken as well. So another idea I've heard about is loaner wheelchairs. For example, if I'm in a car accident, my car insurance company will pay for me to get a rental car while my car is being repaired. So I've heard that similar question being posed in a wheelchair sense, meaning could loaner wheelchairs be provided to consumers while their wheelchairs are down or being repaired? I have some questions about that, especially on the complex rehab side where the wheelchairs are very, very different from each other. They're unique for each person. So I wanted to ask about that, whether it's feasible in complex rehab to just give a loaner chair. And then I also wanted to ask if insurance payers, whether that's Medicare or Medicaid or private payers, United Healthcare, Kaiser, Blue Cross, whether those insurance companies or entities are also paying for loaner wheelchairs the way that my car insurance company would pay for my rental car.
Yes and no, they don't. Let me answer because I can answer that one very well. Most insurance plans will ask you to provide a loaner. That's kind of some of their policies they'll put in their DME provider manuals and say you need to have something in place for them. They don't always specify exact match for match for a client because that's very challenging to do. CMS, Medicare, does offer a one-month rental that if you have a loaner chair, if you have the availability, they'll let you rent for 1 month only, which 9 times out of 10, if you're doing a complex chair, depending on the parts and pieces and timelines. Hopefully you get it done in 30 days, but that's not always the case. Commercial insurance plans, a lot of times, is very, very, very few that will give you a loaner, reimburse it for a loaner. Typically, those are done at our cost. We have loaners we give out as a provider because we know we need it. The challenge is, as you mentioned earlier, Lori, is if someone's in a group 3 complex, let's say they have a specialized back and seating cushion in that because of their conformities of their bodies, we don't always carry all those because they're individually configured. So that would mean I would need for every single client, I make a individually configured chair. I have to have a backup of that same model. That's not always going to be in stock and try to be able to do those and get that out. Ideally, it would be great if we had some policies out there that allows for repair of backup chairs. Most of our complex users that you kind of asked at the beginning, a lot of times, because you said like a chair is good for 5 years, if you've been in a chair, they'll have one that's sitting in their home, so another backup. If we could get ability to have those backed up as a possible repair and keep them functioning a little bit, MassHealth was the first state to do that, which is great. I wish all states had that. They kind of recognize the curve on it. They're a little bit ahead because they know loaners is a challenge for those complex clients. It would be great if we had something like that, because it's very challenging for us to get like-for-like configuration chaired loaners for that client, because everyone breaks down at different times. The unfortunate thing is, too, what really kicked us in the teeth over this past year and a half was to the supply chain shortages. What we ended up doing this past year and a half was cannibalize what loaners we did have of our complex. We were stealing joysticks off them to give to the customers to keep them up and running, using parts and pieces off of that. So some of our loaner fleet have also got depleted this past year and a half. Now we're trying to build that back up. But we're always going to be challenged to have like for like. It's almost impossible to do. Even CMS only has it, you know, where you have Medicare only has it that a person's allowed to have a manual backup for a power user. Like they allow you to have, and they pay for that. But nobody else does that. But even a manual backup is not good for a group three chair user. It's useless, right? They can't move themselves. They have to have someone move them. So it's a challenge. And these are some of the things that we're dealing with, but it continues. We're going to keep trying to do our best we can. There's some programs out there like MassHealth that said they're kind of ahead of the curve. They're actually trying to look at doing a loaner fleet program to get off the ground to help out providers because they know it's such a challenging time thing to do. Because 9 times out of 10, when we get our loaner chairs back, they come back quite damaged and we can't use them again. So that's another problem. And of course, that's all, I hate to say it because I don't want to sound pity party here, but it's out of cost of our pocket too. We don't get those fixed. It's on us to get them, get them replaced. But it's an issue. I would love to have a loaner for everybody in the world, but that's not always the reality of what we're dealing with.
Yeah. You know, as Diana said, look, you know, we need to remember that complex rehab wheelchairs are not standard DME. You know, a DME chair, you can easily replace one for another. You got a K1 wheelchair, you deliver another K1. It doesn't matter. The complex rehab equipment we provide is physician prescribed and individually configured for that consumer. And it may have 8 different manufacturers onto that one chair. We don't get paid to keep a similar type of that type of chair in stock in case repair is needed. And in several cases, I can tell you, if we provide a standard DME wheelchair, we could end up causing more medical issues for that consumer, which is, you know, completely against what we stand for. We're there to help them. You know, the approach that Diane outlines as a potential solution for the more complex cases, I think, is very innovative. I think Massachusetts should be commended for that. We also believe, though, trying to get prevent repair issues before they become emergencies is an important thing. That's why we're asking for preventive maintenance. We're asking payers to cover and fund preventive maintenance so that we can identify and fix those items, ensure the consumer's equipment is in good working condition to meet their needs before it becomes a problem. Now, Medicare, you know, regarding loaner chairs, Medicare does cover loaner wheelchairs, as Diane said. You know, payers and policymakers need to provide resources to ensure that loaner fleets are kept in good working order, and investments can be made to expand those for consumers. As Diane said, the state of Massachusetts has set aside funds to expand the statewide loaner fleet because they've recognized it as a problem. And we commend them for that. And we would also like to see other states look to do the same thing.
I think both of you have done a really great job in demonstrating how wheelchair repair is such a massively complex issue. And of course, at the heart of that, at the center, is always the consumer, right? Whose mobility is lost and who cannot go to school, cannot go to work. They cannot maybe redistribute their weight and do pressure relief. They're always at the center, but I think you've done a really good job of showing the ripple effects and how this ripples out to everyone. Even Diane mentioning that the loaner chair will come back and itself need repair, right? So you want that loaner chair to be ready for the next person, but if you need a technician to spend time working on the loaner chair, that's a technician who's not spending time working on an active consumer repair, and it's just like you don't have enough people and enough expertise to handle that. So I know that NSM and NCART are working on a lot of different possible solutions, many of which you've mentioned. You've mentioned preventive maintenance, for example, because we know what repairs wheelchairs are likely to need, and when they're likely to need them. So we know more or less when we can expect that we're going to need to look into that. Just like I know for my car that at a certain mileage point, I need to get the oil changed and I need to look at new tires or rotate the tires. I can tell by how much I drive that car. And I know we can tell by how much somebody uses a wheelchair when they will likely need repairs. So I wanted to ask you what other plans or strategies you're working on, including legislation. I know legislation takes a long time, but what other strategies, I guess, are you working on that you haven't mentioned yet?
I think it's important that, you know, we as a company, because we are a national and we always have a spotlight on us being a national provider, you know, we are looking at our certain markets to see where we're really hit hard on backlogs. Because they're, like I said before, with supply chain, new chairs, repairs, backlogs, we're pulling some resources to kind of bring in other areas and do a SWAT or a market blitz, as I like to call it, to try to get the backlog caught up and try to get to that point where we're not, you know, we're finally getting all the parts and pieces in to get out and get it done as fast as we can. But that takes time. You know, it takes, you know, probably a month or two to get this caught up, at least depending on what a market amount of people that we're doing. As part of that too, we're now looking at, you know, different inventory stocks, what we have and what we're doing, learn from what we've learned over the COVID time, right? Like, trust me, our inventory levels now are going to go up, even though our supply, you know, our supply shelf might only be so big. We're looking at now changing some of the things that we're doing because of what we experienced with the COVID situation and supply chain shortages. So there's are things that we're starting to do a little bit differently. We're also looking at how we submit to insurance plan or what we're looking to kind of short route what we can. Take a little bit more risk on us to get things done quicker and faster that we might pay for. I mean, let's face it. I always love the joke that the insurance says not every payer guarantees a payment of claim at the end of the day. And we've lived and breathed that, but we're taking more risks with that because we know the repair timeline is just, it's not as short as it needs to be for our clients. You know, and as I stated earlier, we have IT platforms that we're improving upon as part of the routing, part of the strategies, part of the submittals to the plans, part of what we're doing with the, you know, orders to our manufacturers when we do have to get something in that has to be individually configured. How are we doing it faster, quicker? How do we get it shooted out to our manufacturers without having to do extra steps? That's part of our IT platforms that we're trying to improve. And of course, the other thing is to train our technicians, right? Getting our manufacturers involved to help us train our technicians to be learn them quicker, faster, smarter, you know, to get it out there to get these things done. But again, to that point, you know, we need to find good quality staff out there to do it and keep them. It's a high turnover industry because we do all the stuff in a home. It's not the easiest thing to do. Some people have a knack for it, have the compassion to work with our clients, but not everybody. And sometimes the turnover is kind of high for our technicians. I mean, that's something that we're constantly battling in trying to get staff that stays. We want a technician that has more than 2 years experience underneath their belt because they know it. They know how to do the repairs. They know how to do those things. So we have done some stuff where we've, you know, increased salaries. We've done sign-on bonuses. We're incentive plans to keep our technicians and keep them moving or even promote them to become like an assistive technology professional down the road, get them those service letters, steps to keep them with us. But again, it's a challenge. But I like to say to anybody listening out there who's looking, we are hiring. If you want to be a technician, come on over. We never turn anybody away. We're constantly posting for positions because we need our technicians. Technicians, as I always say, is the backbone of the company because that's what keeps everybody up and moving. You know, people kind of make the joke, like you said, your car gets repaired, you have no service oil. I treat our clients like if we had preventative or some of those things, think about it. You go to a dentist every 6 months. Why? Because you want to keep your teeth in shape before it becomes a problem. We need to be looking at our clients the same way. That mobility is their legs. It is their life. It is how they get to work. It's how they get to school. It's how they do everything. And so we need to get to that point where we're able to maintain the staffing, maintain what we need, but also have all the other steps that we need to keep them moving. It's just, like I said, the policies we've had in place have been in there for too long. Haven't been changed, haven't been looked at. And it's growing. We have an aging population. Mobility needs are going to not go down. The unfortunate thing, they're increasing, and there's less of us out there doing it. So it's a perfect storm that we need help.
I think the pandemic really forced all businesses, not just complex radio providers and NSM, to become more efficient and make investments that would help their customers. And I commend them for doing that. As Diane discussed, NSM has made those significant investments that have helped the situation. But we got to remember, a number of things have been outside of their control. Supply chain, we talked about, and we're aware of that. You know, we keep talking about labor shortages, and that hit every industry. The last number I thought was, I think, 8.83 million job openings nationwide still exist. But again, these were things that were not controllable by NSM, but had a huge impact on their customers. Now, again, the supply chain has gotten better. However, as Diane's mentioned, finding the right workers, and it's the key, the right workers, remains a challenge for the industry and all companies. You know, you mentioned legislation. It's not just legislation. There's some things we could potentially do with regulation, but we do know that legislation does take time, but we want to make sure we get it right. We don't want any unintended consequences occurring within legislation. That's why it does take a little bit more time to do. But, you know, really, it's, as we said, the old way of putting a Band-Aid on the problem is over. Consumers in the industry are demanding reforms that will speed up the repair process. And we believe that legislation may be required to do that. We'd also like to go down the road of regulation as well, if we could. But it's all, again, being focused on the consumer. Let's get this problem resolved for them and get these items fixed as fast as possible.
Well said. Very well said. My last question is, given the complexity, the obvious complexity of this issue, if there are any stakeholders out there, whether that's consumers or family members, clinicians, suppliers, manufacturers, if anybody wants to help, wants to get involved, wants to know what they can do at a grassroots level, do you have any advice as to how they could reach out, how they could get involved and be part of the resolution here?
Advocate hard with your government, payers, advocate with your, like the associations that we already mentioned, they're advocating, we're trying to get that. Consumers, they got to advocate for themselves. The fact that they don't even get coverage for transportation, they even come to a branch if something goes down, they only get transportation coverage for medical visits. That's not great because our clients, you know, they're at a disadvantage. You can schedule your medical visit out months in advance and have that taken care of. But when your chair goes down, and if we can't get to them that same day or that week, or that, it's hard. If we have a transportation, you know, advocate for these things. Get policy changes coverage. You know, we need preventive maintenance. We need things that will help our clients not get to the point where they break down and they're stranded. We need to have steps that prevent that. We need to have those type of things in there. It's not just to, you know, power backup chair, be able to repair those and keep them moving. You know, we had that backup, like we said, MassHealth does it. We have a pocket too, actually New York that had that too at one point in time that really helped. These are things that are worth advocating for the clients to advocate for themselves too. It's not just provider side. It has to do with keeping everybody moving. We need these things. These are so important. I'm advocating. I'm constantly going and talking with our senators and congressmen and CMS and our advocacy groups, explaining all the things that we go to. With my position from operations and dealing with the insurance plans, it's a little bit more of an insight, the exact realities of what it takes to do this. Of course, we're going to keep trying to hire and get more in place, right? That's always ongoing, what we as a provider need to do and keep doing to do it better and smarter. But I'm saying for those out there in the industry to really understand and question it and walk it through the life of what the client goes through, what we as a provider go through, and then what it takes behind the scenes. Ask the questions, because I think that's often missed. When we have some of these meetings, people get an eye-opening and say, ask, walk it through. There is no one fix. It's a multi-step fix. And it's going to take time. This is not going to get solved within the next 2-3 months. This is going to take, you know, a year, 2 years out before we really get to where we need to go.
Yeah, I would say too, I would commend Diane. I've worked with her in a number of those meetings with senators and representative and different legislators, different agencies. And she's exceptional at advocating for the consumer and making sure we can quicken the process. So she does an amazing job. I would simply ask everyone to become more educated in the present process so they can understand this is not a simple solution. I had one consumer that we had worked with at one point say to me, Wayne, I had no idea how much red tape is involved with my equipment. He's like, it's eye-opening. So again, I think the more that we educate, the more people understand, the better approach we can bring to fixing the problem. You know, I would ask consumers to work with us and come together to advocate for reforming the repair and service system. You know, I will tell you, the industry is committed to fixing this issue for consumers now and in the future, but we need their help and support to do that. In my opinion, this is a fight worth fighting because we want to ensure that we're taking care of those folks that we serve. That's the most important thing.
Thank you very much. With that, we'll wrap up this podcast with Diane Rossico from NSM and Wayne Grau from NCART. Thank you both very much for updating us on the work that's being done on wheelchair repairs.
Thank you so much, Leigh. I mean, this is an important topic for us, obviously, for what we do for our consumers, but we do want feedback, and I do thank you for the time.
I would say, too, thanks, Lori. We appreciate the opportunity to discuss this issue and talk about how we want to solve it for the people that we serve.
Well, thanks for being here. I will also throw in the NCART website URL, which I believe, Wayne, is ncart.us. If anyone wants to contact Wayne, that's how you can find him. NSM's URL is nsm-seating.com. Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes is to subscribe. And you can also go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thanks very much for being with us, and we'll be back again soon.